Thanks very much, Glenn. Can we have a roll call, please, Julie? Is that possible?
Well, shall I do a roll call for you?
Or Glenn, yes, thanks.
Yes.
I'd like to. Be great.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. On the call, we have Michael Young, Charles Gomes, Claudio Di Gangi, Rafik Damak, and for staff, we have Julie Headland and Glenda Saint-Jerie, myself, and Tony Harris has just joined us.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, over to you, Michael. There is an echo on the call, which I will try and ask the operator to get rid of.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, I think we're on subtask two, if I recall correctly. And that's where we have a series of comments in here. Julie, do you want to walk us through what we've done with the comments that came in over the list?
Yeah, this is Julie. Michael, I should point out that actually Rafik's comment relates to subtask one. Do we want to address that first?
Absolutely. Let's start with that.
Okay. Thank you. Let me bring that up. So Rafik's comment is to subtask one, section two, paragraph F. And he has amended the language. Shall I read the paragraph with his amendment?
Please do.
It reads, in the case of rejection of an application or a dispute in connection with an application, the applicant may lodge a complaint with the ICANN ombudsman, and the inserted language is, if the group accepts and valid ombudsman as neutral and no biased third party. And then the rest of the paragraph reads, the process for lodging a complaint with the ombudsman is set forth in Article 5 of the ICANN bylaws and in the ombudsman framework available at, and then the link is inserted.
So I don't understand the language there. If the group accepts what, and what does it mean valid ombudsman? And it may be, Rafik, that what you're suggesting is fine, but it's not making sense to me. Maybe you could explain what you're trying to get at here so we could just fix the wording.
So as I see, the ombudsman is for a kind of arbitration case in some cases, so I think in arbitration that both parties need to agree about a neutral third party. So by default, I think if each group will accept or not the ombudsman as neutral party, that's why what I try to write in that part. So just if every group will accept or not, so it will depend to the group at the beginning, maybe to be written in the charter, so they accept the ombudsman as the third party or not.
So what you're suggesting is that the stakeholder group or constituency involved would have the option to use the ombudsman as a neutral and non-biased third party. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so we might want to be specific and say if the stakeholder group or constituency, because those are the two groups we're talking about, right? In fact, we may want to just state this option totally separate to make it as clear as possible. And then the rest of it, Rafik, so if the constituency or stakeholder group accepts the ombudsman as a valid and neutral non-biased third party. Did I capture that right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now I understand what you're getting at. That, and so we just, I think, is everybody else that do we? I guess we can discuss whether the merits of that. So, by the way, Rafiq, one more question before I let others talk. Would what would happen if they didn't accept the ombudsman as the neutral third party?
So I think that the idea that we just provide recommendation to the groups not to constrain. So in that case, it's up to each group to choose by default the ombudsman or to choose another third party if possible. But we can just recommend, but not so to suggest, not to recommend. I think recommend to. It can be a kind of constraint, like you just suggest, optimal, but it's up to each group to select him as not third party or not.
So there wouldn't be if a constituency or stakeholder group didn't elect to use the ombudsman as that neutral third party, then. It would. There just wouldn't be a neutral third party. Is that correct?
Yes, they just select another way for that.
Oh, and that would be up to the group to decide?
Yes.
Well, let me weigh in here, Chuck, for a second.
Sure, I'm done, Michael. Sorry to monopolize there, but I think I know where he's coming from now. That's helpful.
Yeah, and I worry because simply because if the ombudsman is considered insufficient, then we're back to the original problem we were trying to solve by inserting the ombudsman. And, you know, Chuck, correct me if you think I'm missing that, but that's the way I recalled it. We want to make sure that something didn't get stalled on a disagreement on what and who compromises a neutral third party. Because originally, I think the statement said something about just, you know, the parties will agree upon a neutral third party, and we all felt kind of uncomfortable with that. So we tried to insert a direction to follow, and that's how we came to the ombudsman.
Yeah, it seems possible that if a constituency or stakeholder group decided not to use the ombudsman, that the applicant would have no recourse, and I thought what we were trying to do is to have some neutral recourse for the applicant.
Michael, this is Claudio. Could we just maybe add some language in saying that it could be either the ombudsman or another neutral third party, that the group would basically determine.
Okay, so we could say may lodge a complaint with the ICANN ombudsman or a mutually agreed upon neutral third party?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the applicant and the group would have to mutually agree on a neutral third party? That could be hard.
I agree, Chuck, but I mean, I don't understand how else you achieve a consensus on what's a neutral third party. I mean, one party or the other may be feeling.
Yeah, I know. I understand. Yeah.
It's a case of arbitration, so I think that's what Michael and suggested. So it's okay. Good compromise.
Okay. So, Julie, can we try that language in there?
Sure. This is Julie. I'll go ahead and read it. In the case of unfair treatment resulting in the rejection of an application or dispute, the applicant may lodge a complaint with the ICANN ombudsman or a mutually agreed upon neutral third party. And the rest of this reads, the process for lodging a complaint with the ombudsman is set forth in Article 5 of the ICANN bylaws and the ombudsman framework available at link.
Now, did you, Julie, forgive me, but did you have the non-biased third party, non-biased in there as well as neutral?
No, I didn't. So that would be a mutually agreed upon non-biased neutral third party?
Well, Rafiq had that in there, so I don't know if that's important or not. That's why I brought it up.
I think the non-biased doesn't hurt. It might be a little redundant, but so no harm done. Why don't we leave it in there?
I've put it in. This is Julie. So now it reads, or a mutually agreed upon non-biased neutral third party.
Okay. Rafiq, how do you feel about that?
Oh, that's okay.
It sounds. Any other objections, or can we? Because if I'm not hearing any, we'll move on.
And then that'll be tested with the full group.
Right.
On the list. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. And Julie, can you flag that on the list that we agreed to that change for now?
I will.
Thank you.
And so also. Victoria had sent in comments. She had agreed with the original language we had there, but of course all the work team members will have a chance to look at this revised language. And she also had sent in a comment that she preferred the original text in Section 3, Paragraph 2 of Subtask 1. So I don't know how we want to address that. That comment that she sent.
I think we need to put both of those, frankly, out to the group. And I thought we had agreed upon consensus in the call, which she was on originally when we made those changes. Was she on that call or not, Julie?
Actually, yeah, that is the issue, Michael, as I understand it. She was on the call, and the language that was agreed on that call is language she agreed to. But Claudio has presented a new version that we discussed on last week's call that Victoria objects to. So she has recommended we go back to the language that was agreed on in the previous call, the call on the 29th of January.
Okay.
Refers that over Claudio's new language.
And she wasn't on last week's call?
She was indeed on last week's call and objected to the new language that Claudio had provided.
Well, that's what I remember, but I'm just making sure we have this all officially stated out. Okay, I don't like bringing things down to necessarily, voting on this, but it sounds like the rest of the group came to a acceptance of those changes last week, and I think what we should do is specifically ask on the list, Julie, if anyone else wants to join Victoria's point of objection. If she's the only one, then I think we have to note that, and I think we've still achieved rough consensus with one person objection.
I should note, Michael, this is Julie, that Krista was not on the call last week. And I don't think she's weighed in on this particular issue.
Okay, so can we actually raise that then on the list and seek clarification?
Certainly. I'll flag both of these in the actions that I send out today for asking people to specifically comment.
Right. Okay. Trying really hard to wrap up that document so we can at least say we've knocked one more off.
Yeah, Michael, could I just Chuck again? Just a comment, and we're talking about Section 3, Paragraph 2, that, and I also have a comment on 2F, or a question on 2F, but I thought we came to a fairly reasonable conclusion because, I mean, the working group model isn't designed for constituencies and stakeholder groups. It's work designed for policy development teams. And so I also didn't I request that we look at the, and I didn't have time to do it, but that we, another thing we could do would be to list the principles associated with the working group model rather than say, function on the GNSO working group model because it really isn't designed for that purpose. Anyway, I did think the compromise was fairly reasonable, and that's just a comment. Back to 2F. And Victoria's, I'm not sure what she's suggesting there. It looks like that's what we had already. What am I missing? And then, of course, since then we've added Rafiq's suggestion. But if we ignore Rafiq's suggestion for the moment, Isn't what Victoria submitted what was in the document already?
This is Julie Chuck, yes. She responded to Rafiq's suggestion for changed language by recommending that we stay with the original language.
Oh, okay. That's the piece I was missing. So that was in response to Rafiq's suggestion. So she will likely oppose Rafiq's suggestion. Okay. All right. Thanks, Julie. That erases my confusion.
You're welcome.
Michael, can I get in the queue?
Go right ahead.
I actually just on Chuck's first point. I just a few minutes ago sent around some proposed language to the list on section 3.
We can. Julie, do you have that?
I do. I'll be happy to read it, Michael.
Great.
To improve accessibility, transparency, and accountability, all groups should establish and publish a consensus-building model or process in their bylaws or charter. The process or model should be based on the principles of participation, representativeness, process integrity, flexibility, transparency, openness, and other norms common to the GNSO working group model.
That's good, and I probably saw that, and I apologize for not remembering that, Claudio. This past week has been a really crazy for me.
Oh, no, not at all, actually. I just sent it this morning, so.
Oh, you did? Okay. Well, I haven't caught up on my email yet this morning. So, oh, there it is.
Yeah. Okay. I have to say I like this a lot better than the language we have there currently.
Yeah, I do too.
Great.
So, Julie, why don't we test this to the list as well?
I will. Thank you, Michael. I'll do that.
Thank you, Claudio. That's a great addition.
Sure.
It is. Thanks. Thank you very much. That's great.
My pleasure.
We had asked Victoria to respond to questions on a couple of sections in subtask 2. Shall I move on to subtask 2? Because these would be questions relating to what we discussed last week.
Well, let me just ask the floor, Julie. Is there anything else that people would like to discuss on subtask 1? Okay, hearing nothing, let's move on to the other document, Julie.
Okay, great. So on subtask 1, let's see, 1.5 in subtask 2, we had asked for Victoria to explain the meaning of that, and if I could remind people, 1.5 was a sentence that the sentence is 1.5 process issues. We note that steering processes conducted by common membership of the steered and steering groups by individuals, also representing and advocating for interested parties, is very far from ideal indeed. We suggest in future a formal channel of communication with the collective steering entity to the collective work group. And Victoria's comment to our question as to the meaning of that paragraph, she says, as to 1.5, this is self-explanatory and a formal, written, and transparent method of communicating from chair to chair is recommended in future.
I'm trying to find the email, or did she just send that to you, Julie?
No, I thought she sent it to the team. I took those comments from her as well as Rafiq's comments and sent them all to the group just this morning in a...
Okay, let me look at your email then. That's easier.
Meeting? Right.
Thank you. Okay.
What's this?
Well, I thought those are the two of the comments that we just looked at.
Yeah, I don't see the thing that you were just discussing.
She was responding to my action items, and so the action items that I had sent out from last week's call, and we had specifically asked her in the action items to respond to changes in subtask two, and in particular, with respect to 1.2 improvements in subtask two, we deleted the work group deleted the second paragraph there, and so in responding to that, in her email, she says, as to 1.2, I have no comments as to the edits so far. And then we asked her to clarify the meaning of 1.5, and then she responded to that. So she was going down the line and responding to, in her message, responding to each of the action items that we had specifically requested her to.
Julie, was that sent to the list?
Yeah, the email, guys, is on February 10th. I have it at 10:36 a.m. Eastern.
Right.
Oh, okay, so it's Saturday.
And it's the list, and then what I did was, just for ease of today's meeting, rolled it up into the message with Rafiq so we could run down them, but she did send it to the list.
Oh, so it's as to 1.5? Is that the one we're talking at, 1.5?
1.5 in subtask 2. And
yeah,
that was...
I see it. Okay.
Yeah, it's process issues is the title.
It's the one we discussed last week where we felt it was unclear, and we asked her for clarification.
I still don't understand it, although she may say it's very clear, but unfortunately my understanding is a little limited.
Well, you're not alone, I don't think, Tony.
Yeah, Julie, I think we need to clarify with her again, since she's not on the call, clarify with her again that I appreciate her feeling that it's straightforward and understood, but she's going to, I think we should schedule the next call for her to run us through and explain it to us.
Okay, that's fine, Michael. This is Julie. I will note that we will discuss this item on the next call when Victoria is available.
Yeah. I'm with everybody else. I don't understand what this sentence means. Or two sentences, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very obtuse for me. That may be me. Maybe it's me that's obtuse. But.
Well, then there's at least two of us, Chuck.
three of us, actually.
Anybody on the call understand what the language says?
Yeah, Chuck, this is Claudio. I'm not sure for certain, but I can interpret it, and I think she's referring to the OSC and the fact that there's common membership on the OSC and our work team. And I think her second sentence is referring to having a formal way of communicating with, I guess, the OSC or whoever.
Okay. So that might make sense. I don't know if we're in agreement that that's a concern or not. Certainly, the common membership has to be dealt with appropriately, but I thought that it had been in the one action that went forward, but maybe she disagrees with that.
Yeah, I agree with that, Chuck. I didn't have any of these process concerns, but I mentioned that to Victoria, but I guess she does apparently.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if that's what it is, I would still support removing Section 1.5.
So would I.
Yeah, I'm on the same page too.
Yeah,
Rafiq, what do you think?
Really, I don't know.
Okay, that's okay.
It's up here for me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I understand these recommendations to be recommendations for ongoing work.
Well, and if something was left in, it would have to be made much clearer. I mean, if it's a concern with the common membership between the OSC and the CSG, that should be said.
Yes, language.
You know, I don't necessarily agree with it, but it should. That's what should be said, and then it might be easier for us to see whether we have at least rough consensus in the working team in that regard.
Okay. Julie, can we ask her if this is what she means? And if so, could she clarify the language, take a shot at clarifying the language?
It's already clear, Michael. Sorry.
Michael, this is Julie. I can ask, but we have asked, and she feels that it's clear. I think your first suggestion that we discuss it with her.
Yeah, you're right. Let's just discuss it with her and ask her if that's what she means verbally. It'll go faster. Well, maybe.
Just know that if we ask again, we're going to get a different response than what she, you know, what she has given.
Well, an email, anyways. Sure.
Email, I mean, an email, I mean. Yeah.
So, just
right.
We need to discuss it because, at least I haven't heard anybody. You know, the only plausible explanation has been the one Claudio gave. So we should test that and see if that's what she's getting at.
Okay. So, Julie, where did we get to in 1.2, in subtask 2?
Right. So we went through part 2 recommendations, and we covered in that section 1, subsection 1, executive committees, and 2, committees. And we now would be starting with 3, communications.
Julie, actually, I think, I'm not sure if we made it all the way through 2, or if we did, I might not have had a chance to make
yeah,
it.
Julie, I see that we have changes through 2. Perhaps we did not discuss C and D. My sense was that we did, but I'm happy to read those through again.
Yeah, let's pick up from C to C then, just to be safe, Julie. But let's actually, the language change in B, was that accepted by everybody?
It was accepted in last week's call. Since not all team members were on the call, I have it in curly brackets.
Okay. And before we go on with new review, the comments that are in this document from last week, has anyone explicitly objected to these changes?
Well, I'm having a little trouble with what the change is in B. It doesn't seem to flow. So it says, the formation of all committees should be made known to the entire constituency membership and eligibility to participate. And eligibility to participate should be open to all members.
Yeah.
So maybe is there a should missing?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. If you add that should in there, it makes sense.
Actually, should be, I think. Should be open.
Yeah, should be. Yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah.
I've added that. This is Julie.
Okay.
shall I start with C?
Right. Does anyone want to comment on any of the changes further up the document, or... Okay, hearing nothing, let's continue with 2C.
That reads, the fact a committee has been established and the membership of it shall be published on the constituency website and action points, decisions, and any resolutions and final work products should be made available to the entire constituency membership within a reasonable period of any given meeting.
I don't have any objections to that one. Does anyone else?
Michael, you know, I'm okay with this concept here. My concern is just it's a little detailed. It's saying that action points should be made available to the entire constituency membership within a reasonable period of any given meeting. I'm just wondering, like, you know, how practical that is if we're just talking about a small, group that a constituency or stakeholder group has formed, maybe to look at some policy issue or something like
well,
that.
Well, I don't know. It seems to me that action points are what we typically assume are the highlights that end up in meeting minutes, right? So if you have another suggestion, another phrase rather than action points to capture you know, key elements of things that should be in minutes. I think that'd be great if you could offer it. But I, you know, really, some of these smaller groups or smaller committees sometimes are smaller because they're working on difficult things. I'll give you an example in our own stakeholders group, where we had a relatively small group of people working on elements of our new charter. And in, you know, one particular area that was quite complicated and difficult was how we were going to do our own voting arrangements. That was actively 4 or 5 people working on that. But you can bet the entire group was very vested in understanding, you know, what we were covering and what actions we were taking and what we were deciding, because it had, that small group had an incredible piece of work and influence. That work had an incredible influence over the entire stakeholders group. So as a point of example, I don't think that, you know, when we say it could be a small group or a small committee, that may have no correlation with how important the outcome of their work is.
No, that's true. And I didn't mean to focus it on the size of the group. Maybe I just should have said if it was a committee that was formed on maybe an issue not as important as the one that you're talking about. I'm just worried practically asking them to put all their minutes, action points, all these items up on a website, just the administrative element of that.
Well, it's really asking, isn't it, Claudio, just asking that any action items, decisions, or resolutions and final work products be published. So it doesn't mean that they have to report, I don't think, every detail of their work, but rather when they do make some action, take some, agree on some action items, make some decisions or resolutions, or produce a final work product, that should be made available to the entire membership. If that's what it means, that seems pretty basic.
Yeah.
No, now, maybe we could wordsmith it. I don't know.
No, that's true. I when I was reading it the first time, I thought all that had to go up on the website. So,
well, it does say that, but only action items, decisions, resolutions, final work products, not every detail of what they're doing.
Right.
Yeah, or the discussion that led to the action point. I mean, if you had to post, you know, 40 minutes of active discussion to come to one action point, then I would agree that would be very onerous. But, you know, all we're looking for is the actual action point, which, you know, could be 7 or 8 words.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's still bothering you, maybe you want to take a little bit of time and try wordsmithing it and post that to the list.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give it some more thought.
Julie, want to go on to the next one? Sorry, does anyone else have any other comments on C? Okay. Let's do D, Julie.
Right. That reads, it is recommended constituencies publish to the constituency membership and maintain a list of all active and inactive committees and their final decisions, resolutions, and final work products.
Okay. So this to me just sounds like a simplified version of C in reference to constituency versus committee. And do we have to change constituency to constituency/stakeholder group?
This is Julie. Actually, I believe last week that Chuck noted as a general change throughout the document to change constituency to constituency and stakeholder group, which is something that I have noted to do.
Okay. I personally don't have any issues with this. Does anyone else want to raise anything with D?
Michael, my only comment with D is the reference to inactive committees. And seems like this is suggesting that an archive of inactive committees be maintained and all their work product, et cetera. I'm just wondering, again, if it's inactive and, you know, is that an administrative problem to have to maintain an ongoing list of all that material? I'm just... You know.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I think once you post it up, you know, the results of an active committee and it's completed its work and folded itself. The way I read this is that just the, what was posted up remain and somewhere on some on available to the rest of the constituency. I have to say I think that's valuable because sometimes, you know, we have new members coming in or people that weren't involved in a particular decision working on a subsequent, you know, or secondary decision that, that does refer back to previous decisions, and they'd like to know, you know, many times I've started getting involved with the stakeholders group, I guess, Chuck, almost a couple of years ago now, when I came in, although I've been in the industry since, you know, 2001, there were a lot of decisions made around those groups that really had an influence on what position I thought I should take on things we were currently discussing, and it would have really helped me if I'd known, you know, who, where, why certain decisions had been made. The only way I was able to achieve that was to go back and, you know, ask a bunch of people, fortunately, who've been around longer than I, and pull from the collective memory. That's really less than ideal, and I think, you know, we've been very, very fortunate, you know, in these ICANN groups that there is a continuity of people that have been here almost really since the beginning of ICANN. But I think over the next few years, we're going to see a lot of them, you know, rolling off these responsibilities and doing other things with their lives. And if we aren't recording these kind of things, we're going to lose that continuity.
And I'm one who has been around since before the GNSO was formed. And I also look back at things. I think what would be onerous on this is if we required constituencies or stakeholder groups to retroactively do this, because that would be a lot of work, and I don't think I'd wish that on anybody. It'd be nice, but you know, we're all volunteers and have limited time. So I think if this was going forward a practice, it's much less onerous and easy to do, because if you report the outcome of the committee, then you can just move that to an archive section of the site. It's a pretty simple task. Asking people to go back and do this over past years would be very, very difficult.
Yeah. So what if we added a little bit of language here just after the constituency membership? So it would read something like, it's recommended constituencies published to the constituency membership and going forward maintain a list of active and inactive committees.
It's fine with me. I think it's Claudio, would that work? Would that help?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's helpful. You could even say, for future reference or going forward, like you said, Michael, I think either one would work. Yeah, I mean, I could live with these sections. I was just, you know, I just had those general concerns.
Sure.
It's the admin burden.
Yeah, and I guess one of the things that I'm, when you raise the concern about the admin, I think the tools and the commitment we have to actually provide, you know, in our other document that there's going to be some centralized tools and capabilities available to these groups, you know, such as wikis and so forth, I think that should ease the burden quite a bit. I mean, my understanding with those that tool set that will be put together for them should be that, you know, becomes a trivial burden to be able to self-serve and post things up like this.
Yeah. Michael, I actually had a question about that. I think I recall the council approved, the GNSO council approved the toolkit, and I just wasn't sure what the next, if that's been sent to the board or what the next step in that.
Claudio, it doesn't need to be sent to the board. It doesn't require board approval. Once the council approved it, that was fine. It was reported to the board, okay, so that they're aware of the progress. That is now in implementation stage, and staff is working on that.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, this is Julie. I can comment on that. Rob Hogarth and I have the task to move this forward, and we are working on the next steps.
Great. Thank you.
Julie, as a side note, if you know, obviously I've worked in associated industries for a long time and pretty familiar with a lot of these type of tools. You know, I'm happy to give you guys opinions or help out if it's useful.
Michael, that's very helpful. I appreciate that. We may indeed call on you.
Okay. So anything else on D? 2D? Shall we go on to 3A?
Right. 3A, Section 3, Communications. All constituency mailing and discussion groups shall be open to the entire constituency membership and, at the election of the constituency in any given case, to the public. It is recommended each constituency should have at least one publicly archived mailing list.
Boy, that's really broad.
Yeah.
I'm not really opposed to the general concept, but I'm wondering if it would become ridiculously complex to comply with that.
I agree.
You know, we do lots of things that are informal and stuff like that, and it's not to be non-transparent. It's just to facilitate things happening. And, boy, that could make our lives really challenging.
I agree with that.
I mean, the mailing list, I think that's already accepted, and I think that's something that is archived. Is that right for all? I'm not even sure that's true. I don't know.
No, I don't think every group has a publicly archived.
We probably don't. I mean, open to the entire constituency membership, I think, it is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
The public posting is where it gets...
Well, first of all, having a publicly archived mailing list is... I mean, it can be done, but then it requires a lot of management and oversight. You really have to continue. Then you need also policies of what if somebody in a publicly available mailing list, what if somebody posts outside the membership posts something that's highly inappropriate, for example. Whose responsibility is it to A, decide that it's, you know, offensive, and B, remove it? And then you leave, you know, yourself open to questions of what's a valid policy for when you remove a publicly said statement.
There's another issue also, if I might chip in here, which is privacy, because publicly archived mailing lists would have the email addresses of all the people in the constituency.
Right.
Yeah.
So now, this whole area is a bit complicated.
Yeah, Julie, with regard to the charters that have been approved and the ones that are still being worked, what has staff recommended to constituencies and stakeholder groups in regard to what is included in this statement?
I don't know off the top of my head, I'm sorry to say, but I can easily check on that. I should note
that would be helpful information, I think.
I will check on that. But I should note that with respect to the current you know, discussion lists, you know, all of the various working groups and so on, all of those lists, you know, within ICANN are publicly archived but are not available to the public, meaning that not anyone can send to a list, although one can read the traffic on those lists on the ICANN website. And I should note that in those cases, the emails are redacted. So, I mean, of course, there does need to be a mechanism in place for that. But if you'll note, the personal emails are redacted.
Yeah. You know what, guys, I'd like to suggest on 3A that we just strike the last sentence.
Yeah, I agree with that, too.
Well, Michael, I mean, that may be fine, but the first sentence is still terribly broad. All constituency mailing and discussion groups. I mean, we can form a two-person discussion group that, or a drafting team or whatever, just to get something going. And we're making, I think we're putting in a terrible administrative burden as broad as that, even the first sentence is.
Well, do we drop the word discussion, Chuck? And discussion groups?
All constituency, what does it mean? Mailing lists shall
correct.
Be open to the entire constituency membership and at the election of the constituency to the public. And that's probably okay. I think that discussion groups just is so broad that it would be an administrative nightmare.
Right. I don't even know what discussion group means in terms of electronic conveyance. I mean, does that mean you and I talking in the hallway?
It could. Well, that's one of my concerns. Or, you know, I mean, even if we more formally in a stakeholder group or constituency form a small little group to get something started, you know, having to administratively make sure all of that is recorded and distributed, we're going to be spending so much time just managing these things that it'll be counterproductive.
Yep,
exactly.
Okay.
Michael, this is Claudio.
Really? Sorry, go ahead, Claudio.
I was going to say, you know, if I remember the board report correctly, I think that as far as mailing lists and items like this, I think their main recommendation was that there be one public list for each group. You know, I know some of the constituencies have expressed previously that they've had them, and they, I guess, is sort of the nature of the list. They haven't been very active. They haven't really been used, and I know those concerns were expressed. But I think, if I recall correctly, that was really what the main recommendation was here. That there's just at least one public list.
Right. Well, so let's take a step back and let's say, for instance, what if, you know, 10 years from now, for the sake of argument, no one uses email anymore. It's replaced by a much more effective electronic conveyance. You know, humor me for a second. It may probably take a lot longer than 10 years for email to die, but sometimes technology can transform incredibly fast if something really appealing to the masses comes out. So, you know, being focused on the conveyance, I think, is the wrong point. I think the intent of that was, the way I would interpret it, I think the intent was that the constituency or stakeholders group share with the public what they're doing to a reasonable level. So that the public can follow along with that and understand, you know, the constituencies or the stakeholders' positions as a group and what they may or may not be advocating for as a group. So I would almost say, you know, the changes we just suggested are okay, and to capture the intent of what I just mentioned by rewriting B. Because B seems to be all about some method of making sure the public knows what's going on, and opening up, you know, mailing lists, which frankly have a ton of noise, and unless you're involved in the day-to-day activities of a group, you know, most emails you think about it on these mailing lists are out of context and wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to a public member trying to read through them. And, you know, even if they were to try and make any sense of them, they'd have to read through pretty much every single email. Perhaps the right thing in B is to replace B with a recommendation for the constituency or stakeholders group to make a page on their website or wiki publicly available where they post their decisions and policy positions or recommendations or general agreed upon activities.
Yes, it's the output of the constituency work that should be made known. I don't see the value in people following every single word that was said or written.
Right. How does everyone else feel about that?
Okay with it.
Okay. Chuck, I remember it was Ken and some other people in our group worked on a statement sort of to that effect, that we would make a recommendation or commitment to posting things in that sort of fashion.
Yeah, we did. I don't recall the details. I wonder if it would if two tasks would be helpful for us before we finalize this item. If Julie can do it without too much trouble, if she could kind of list the key elements of the recommendations that the board made in regard to this issue for us, so that we make sure, because over time we've been working with this for so long, it's hard to keep track of what the board recommended and what we recommended and so forth without doing a lot of backtracking. So if Julie could do that, and then Michael, if you could, you know, go back, it's probably pretty easy to find the stuff that we ended up. We could probably just get it out of our charter in terms of what we agreed to or something.
Right, and so I
can. The board approved our charter, so.
Yeah, I can beg, borrow, and steal from our charter, and maybe get some language, some suggested language for a new B for everyone to consider.
Yeah.
Okay. Is everyone okay with those two action items?
Yes.
That's fine. I'll do that. This is Julie. So you've mentioned 3B. I mean, we were talking about 3A, and 3B is related. Are there? We discussed changes to 3A, but are those held in abeyance until we go ahead and check on these two items? You know, checking what's in the board recommendations and Michael looking at the charter.
I don't know. I thought we were okay with the edit so far to 3A. The problem was is that, you know,
I just wanted to be clear because
3B is connected.
They are related.
Yeah.
Very sort of A and B are very similar. So I just wanted to be sure that we are okay with it. I have recorded the changes that we discussed in A.
Okay.
And then I have the two action items with respect to B. Okay.
Yeah. They wouldn't have any objections to those. Hey, Julie, I think we're good to go.
Great, thanks. Okay, I'm moving on to C. Information as to constituency business and work product and finance and accounts and submissions to staff and other ICANN entities shall be made available to the entire constituency membership unless there are valid grounds for restricting distribution in accordance with the constituency disclosure policy.
Well, is this the only thing this is saying is just making it available to your membership, right?
That's the way I read it.
I mean, that seems okay, unless I'm missing something.
This is Claudio. I think it's, the language is a little vague because I'm not sure. I mean, it says shall be made available, and it's just a little ambiguous to me exactly what that means. My other comment is with the establishment of a constituency disclosure policy, which I don't recall. I don't recall this in detail, but I think that is the establishment of this constituency disclosure policy, which I think is what is being proposed here, is might get complicated, and I'm not sure if that's the direction we all want to go in, really.
Well, I think
that's a good point.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I think the idea with that comment. Yeah, I'm trying to remember back to previous discussions because I was in this subtask group. I think the idea was that if there were privacy elements or concerns that had been articulated in the constituency disclosure policy, that they would basically, you know, they would rule over this consideration if there was privacy issues. We didn't want to step on them by accident. Anyone have any suggested language changes to address the concerns?
Well, what if we just deleted in accordance with the constituency disclosure policy?
Yeah, that would make sense. We end up with restricting distribution.
I mean, that's what if a group had a constituency disclosure policy, that's probably the way they would restrict it. They could have it or not. The point is that if there were valid grounds for restricting distribution,
yeah,
they could do it, whether they do it through a documented policy or not.
Well, but this ties into D, which follows. If you look at it, it's only a sentence. It says we all have to have a constituency disclosure policy.
So what is a constituency disclosure policy? Maybe that's a basic question.
I have no idea.
Is that a yeah.
Well, then we look at E, which elaborates. I almost feel like E is out of sequence.
Does the BGC and their recommendations call for constituencies to have a disclosure policy, or is this sort of come out of creativity?
Who was on the subtask team that developed these?
I was on this one, Chuck.
Was there an agreement in the group on a constituency disclosure policy?
I did not agree with it. I'm not sure how ultimately, that was assessed or what the outcome of that was, but I did not for some of the reasons we're saying now.
I mean, it's very hard to write a policy that covers everything you're going to disclose and not disclose. There are so many factors that come into play on things like that that would be a very challenging task to cover all your bases. And so what you end up is having to have an exception clause, and we're right back to the idea of, if there are valid grounds for restricting distribution, they can do it. If somebody wants to challenge that, they can. But, I don't even know if it's realistic to write such a thing.
Well, we could try something a little more radical and see how the old group responds, Chuck. We could strike D, E, and F, and strike C after valid grounds.
Yeah, that would be the way to do it.
Valid grounds for restricting distribution. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The new period is just after valid grounds.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my inclination. Now, I would, and maybe along with that, it would be helpful to understand what a constituency disclosed for those who supported this concept. What is a constituency disclosure policy, and is it really realistic to even create such a thing?
Well, and one more question, maybe Julie can research this. Again, going back to the board directives, was it part of the initiative that we were requested? I mean, was this alluded to very strongly in some way?
I don't think so. At least not a constituency disclosure policy. But Julie, that doesn't mean you shouldn't look for it. I'm just telling you that.
I don't remember reading that when reading through the BGC document, but I may have missed it, though.
Okay, so let me just roll through what we talked about, and Julie's going to investigate whether or not there was anything in the BCG document that would have a disclosure policy, and we're going to, for now, and we'll see how the rest of the group reacts in the mailing list, but we'll strike We'll create a new period after valid grounds and strike D, E, and F. Do I have that right?
Anybody on this call object to that?
Just one thing. I think we said we'd put a period after valid grounds for restricting distribution, right?
Yes, I think you said that. Didn't you say that? Yeah.
It's just not we said period after valid grounds, but I think
I'm tired and losing my mind. That's where I meant to put the period. I don't know why.
Yeah. After distribution, okay?
You were listening more closely than I was, Tony.
Sorry, guys.
Okay.
Okay, so, yes, the period after restricting distribution, strike D, E, and F. And Julie's got an action item to make sure that we weren't supposed to come up with something specifically in regards to a disclosure policy.
Yeah, this is Julie. I've noted the change in the document, and I'll take an item to look at the BGC report with respect to constituency disclosure policies. I don't recall seeing one there, but I will definitely look.
Sorry, Julie, I think we're making a lot of work for you today.
That's all right, not a problem. I cannot guarantee it will be done today.
Okay. Shall we move on to G?
Yes.
If there's no objections?
G states, all constituencies shall have a published privacy policy providing for the protection of the personal data of individual members and shall restrict publication of classes of information on the same.
This is Claudia. Michael, I think my only comment here might be, I'm not sure if we want to let, you know, if we support this, I'm not sure if we want to limit it to just individual members, or maybe that's sort of inherent in this whole idea that it's personal data. But I just wasn't sure if we're just saying this is just to protect personal individual members, or is it would apply to an organization or things like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I understand really what and shall restrict publication of classes of information on the same. Is the same the individual? Is the same data?
The classes. I think it means the classes.
Okay. What defines the class a class of information as personal?
That would
who defines that?
That would be defined in the privacy policy, wouldn't it?
Okay, so I think it's one challenge to define personal data for an individual. I think defining an entire class of information and calling that and deciding whether or not a class of information constitutes personal data or not is a much bigger challenge.
Maybe if we put a period after individual members and struck the rest out.
Yeah, I'm personally more comfortable with that.
I'm okay with that.
Chuck, anyone else?
I'm taking a look at it again. Clarify again what's being suggested.
I just propose that we end the sentence where it says personal data of individual members and strike out the rest, the one that refers to the classes of information.
I guess I don't see a lot of problem with the rest of it, but I'm not opposed to striking the rest. I think it's covered anyway.
Yeah. I mean, member or individual member, we've previously defined, it could be a corporate entity, for that matter.
Except corporate entities don't have personal data.
Right. So, Maybe we do need a little bit more there, though.
Well, it says of individual members,
What if we swap personal for private?
Now, by the way, it does need some fixing, Michael. You're right, because think of ourselves. We don't have individual members.
Right. So what if
we have members. Organizational members only.
Exactly.
Chuck, sorry, but in the non-commercial stakeholder group, there are individual members. So.
Yeah, right, Rafiq. I guess we just need to fix the language. So maybe it's not of personal data of individual members or individual delegates of members, something like that.
Well, why don't we use your earlier term, Chuck, the personal data of individual or organizational members?
Well, is there such a thing as personal data of organizations?
Well, and then swap personal for private data.
Oh, yeah, that might work. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think that's good.
So what
private data of members, period. No individual in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Does that work, Rafiq?
Okay.
Okay, so we have all constituencies shall have a published private policy providing for the protection of the private data of members, period.
Yep.
That's good. Nice work, guys.
Just to pace things out, Julie, are we scheduled for another 20 minutes or for another 50 minutes today?
We're scheduled for another 20 minutes. I believe Chuck has a...
Okay, right.
Well, my conflict was removed, so if the group wants to go further, I can go a little further.
Unfortunately, I would not be able to go past 9:30. I have preparation for a meeting that will start at 10 and go until 4. So.
Whoa.
So I need just that little bit of time, I'm sorry to say.
So it's not my fault.
I'm sorry.
No, we understand, Julie.
If there's no other comments on 3, finish 3, we can go on to 4.
Right. Section 4, elections. A, all constituency offices, including representatives to stakeholder groups and the GNSO Council, shall have a maximum 2-year limit and a maximum of 2 consecutive terms. An officer who has served 2 consecutive terms must remain out of office for 1 full term prior to serving any subsequent term as an officer. Constituencies can elect terms and term limits below these maximums at their discretion.
It probably should be may instead of can.
Yeah.
There's something missing here. When you're talking about the maximum and consecutive terms, it should be tied to some specific function and not overall, you know, officers, stakeholder groups, GNSO Council, because you could have the case of somebody who's an officer in the constituency for 2 years or 4 years, and then he steps down from that position, but they need him to be on the GNSO Council. So he effectively steps on into another function and does not perpetuate in the one he was involved in previously. Okay. Right now we're saying it's 2 years, 2 years plus 2 for any of these different functions. And I think the 2 plus 2 should be for a specific function, leaving the person open to assume another function after the 4 years.
I thought that would be allowed under this wording. Are you thinking it's not, Tony?
Yeah, I don't think it is either, Tony.
I don't think it's allowed because it says all constituency offices, including representatives to stakeholder groups and the GNSO Council, these are all different functions, right?
So we could add at the end of that first sentence for any one office.
You might have a cleaner edit in the next sentence where it says an officer who served 2 consecutive terms must remain out of office for 1 full term prior to serving a subsequent term. It says right now as an officer, we could say in the same role and function.
Yeah,
or in
that's
the
what
same,
I'm getting at.
Or in that position, either one of them works, I think.
Yeah. In that same position, probably.
I think it might be useful because It's confusing. On top, it's talking about three functions, and then here it says just officer. What you just mentioned, I think, would make it clear that the limit is for any specific function or activity or role.
And I think we ought to do the fix in both sentences, the first and second sentence.
Yeah, I'd fix it in both.
Because the second one's just talking about remaining out of office, and so.
So, yeah. Do we switch in all constituency offices to all constituency elected positions? And then we, in the second sentence at the end, instead of subsequent term as an officer, subsequent term in the same position?
Yes.
You know, that I think that covers it, Michael, but I don't really see it as a problem to include specific references to representatives to stakeholder groups and the GNSO Council. And some people may like to have that level of detail. So if they do, I would say that's fine. I don't have any problem with us making the change you suggested, but I would say that if people come back and would like to have that reference, I don't think it creates any problems because those are two key roles, especially the council one, the stakeholder group one doesn't necessarily apply on the contracted side, but that's okay.
It's still there, though, Chuck. What I'm suggesting is all constituency elected positions, comma, including representatives.
Oh, you didn't take that out. Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I think that's good. I thought you were taking that part out. Okay. And I actually think if we did, it would say that, but the clarity is probably nice.
Yeah. So, Julie, I think that's all constituency elected positions, comma, is the change. First change, everything else, everything stays, and then you go to the second sentence, and the next change is prior to serving any subsequent term in the same position.
Well, you need that in the same position in the first sentence, too, I think, Michael. That's the point I was making.
Yeah, I agree with Chuck. It should be clear in both.
That at the end of the sentence?
Yeah, at the end of the, for a maximum of two consecutive years in any one position or. I'm not sure if in that position works there, but...
Yeah,
but
in the same position.
Yeah.
In the same position.
Yeah, in the same position, yeah.
So we do those edits on both. Okay.
Right, and I've noted those... This is Julie. I've noted those edits in both sentences.
Okay, now here's where I'm going to throw something out. I actually disagreed with how firm this 4A is. And it's somewhere in this document that I disagreed. I think there needs to be a safety outlet because in some cases you can't find somebody who knew to take over the elected position. And volunteers in some cases are very dear and hard to come by. So if somebody is gracious enough and willing enough to fulfill a position and the rest of the stakeholders group or constituency is really happy for them to do that, then right now this disallows them to make that decision.
And
so
did you propose some additional language in that regard, Michael?
I suggested that if a supermajority as defined as 80% of the group agrees to bypass this restriction that they can do so at their own discretion.
Supermajority in most cases in the ICANN world means two-thirds.
Okay.
So I don't think I would say 80%, but I think that, I mean, you've at least got to have quite strong membership support to do it. I think that's okay.
I support that.
So do I.
What about Rafiq?
Okay.
So I'm sorry, this is Julie. How will that read then? What is the language?
Julie, we'll add a sentence on the end that says, in the event that a supermajority of the stakeholder / constituency group agrees, they can, at their discretion, I guess lift or lift these the term limitations.
How about something like this? Exceptions to this requirement may only be made with two-thirds support from the full membership.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, that's good.
I guess it should be exceptions may only be made, not can, like I said.
Okay.
Well, perhaps I would start that sentence saying when circumstances of, let's say, force majeure, the French term, demand exceptions to this, and then the rest is what's said. Sort of, you know, pointing out to the fact that this would be a case of a major requirement, and not just because people grab this clause as a means to bypass the term limit, and it becomes a habit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
In other words, when extenuating circumstances render it impossible to apply the term limit, then we would proceed as you were saying.
So this is Julie. Then I have an additional sentence that reads, when circumstances demand exceptions to this requirement may only be made with two-thirds majority of the membership.
With support from two-thirds of the membership, yeah.
That sounds okay.
Sounds good to me.
I've noted that. Thank you. Shall we move on to B?
Yes.
It is recommended that constituents publish and maintain a list of all office holders, past and present, since inception, to inform new members of the experience of other constituency members and to provide transparency for term limits.
I would just make one edit on that. It's similar to what we did before. Instead of saying since inception, I would say from this point forward or something like that. I think it's nice if they can go back and easily produce the whole history, and some have already done that on their sites if you look at them, but if somebody hasn't done it, do we want them to go back and do that? Maybe it's easy, I don't know. It probably, you know, what do you guys think?
Chuck,
I like it.
Yeah, I agree with you said, Chuck. I had raised the same concern.
Yeah, me too.
Sorry, Chuck, I didn't understand what you said before.
Well, in some constituencies, it probably doesn't apply to stakeholder groups because they're new. Going back to 1999 when the GNSO was formed, and listing all their past officers might be not an easy task. Now, for some of us, I don't think it would be a very hard task, but I'm concerned, Rafik, about retroactively applying some of these things and causing some administrative work on a group to go back and do that. Most of us may be able to do it. I don't know. I'd rather people be focusing on forward-looking things rather than doing a lot of administrative work to comply with something like this in the past. Did that make sense?
Yep.
I mean, Rafik, did that make sense to you?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay. Now, to the extent that groups can do that, I mean, if they've already got it, I wouldn't remove it, you know, because it is nice information. That's another kind of thing that sometimes I look back at and refer to, not too often, but.
So with the added B, it is recommended that going forward, constituencies publish and maintain a list of all office holders, past and present. I would drop since inception. at that point and just go to inform new members of the experience, blah, and so forth?
Yeah, I think that addresses my concern.
I agree.
Is everyone else okay with that?
Michael, this is Claudia. I'm just we're still referencing the listing of past office holders.
But we've clarified saying going forward. So if it's 5 years from now, there should be a past list that started, you know, this year.
I see.
We're not asked to go back and do research on history.
Do you mean? Yeah, I mean, I understand. I understand what you're saying. I'm just trying to grasp if it's clear.
Well, how about this? Claudia, would you mind taking an action item and trying to suggest a bit of language to clean that up?
Sure.
By the way, I think your site does this already. If I remember correctly, I was looking at it the other day.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I think it does have a lot of that information. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty complete, I think.
All right. So, any other comments on Section 4? Because I think we're coming up on 9:30, and rather than start, one element of another section, I think we probably should do a little housekeeping and then close the call.
That makes sense, yes.
Anything further on 4? All right, so the housekeeping item really is just about making sure we're firm on the schedule for the next meeting. Next week, can we repeat the same time frame again? Does anyone have any reason why we should change it again at this point?
I will not be able to make it next week. I will be on an airplane.
All right, so
or
instead of changing the day, we're not going to be able to help you with that one, I guess. Anyone else?
But you guys will do fine without me. It's not as if I have to be there.
But and then it's every opportunity to look over the changes on the list afterwards too.
Yeah.
We were having the call at this time. Was it in part for Chuck's schedule?
Yeah, it was to my disadvantage. And I have a standing meeting at 9:30 Eastern Time, which is right after this takes. By the way, I do want to submit a comment on number 5, and I've made this on the list many times. 5B just doesn't work.
Yeah.
So, and I know that some of you will, I mean, should an organizational member that has 5,000 members have the same voting rights as an individual member? I think not.
No, we'll have to tackle that one for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have some pretty broad concerns just with the whole, you know, getting into the voting issue. I feel like it's really a representational issue.
I do believe that all members should have some voting rights, but as soon as you start saying equal voting rights, it becomes terribly problematic.
Yeah. Well, you know, conceptually, Chuck, I still have the same. I still feel like it's still opening up the same issue. Once you get in there and saying who could vote and who doesn't, it's almost you know you're getting into that issue and it I have the same concerns there as I would by getting into the level of, you know, should the voting rights be equal or based on some other process, because I feel both of those issues involve representational matters.
Don't you think that every member should have some voting privileges?
Right. Guys, I'm going to play traffic cop here, sorry, because we're really at 9:29, and I feel 5, the reason I didn't want to start 5 today was because I feel there's going to be a lot of discussion around 5, and there are a lot of issues with it. So if we can, Chuck, if you want to make sure that we've covered certain elements, perhaps you should post your thoughts to the list prior to Friday's call.
I already did months ago.
Yeah, I think it would help to refresh that.
I don't know if I'll have time. If I do, I will.
Okay. But, you know, I think a few of us, including myself, share your concerns. So, you know, I think rest assured they'll get discussed. So the problem is we don't have that many people on the call today. So if we shift the time to a new time slot, I'm worried we're going to come up against a new conflict. Can we maintain this 90 minutes again next week?
Okay with me.
Okay.
Michael, as far as the time, is, would it still make sense to keep it at 8 or 8 Eastern, or do we...
Look, Julie, I think Julie has, the last couple of calls has had to go at 9:30 as well.
Right. I have a meeting. I could do 9:30, I could do 8:30 to 10. I have a standing meeting that starts at 10, but I typically have some preparation to do for that, so 9:30 is cool if we can go 8 to 9:30.
You mean, I know that that time slot's not ideal for everybody, and I apologize. We really are only doing it so that we can, you know, get an extra 30 minutes and you know, get through this call. We still have a fair bit of ground to cover, you know, to finish our work here.
Yep.
Okay. When we have, hopefully we'll have a little bit better of attendance next week and we can revisit the time frame, Claudio, and see if there's something else we can come up with.
Sure.
Because I'm fairly flexible on Friday mornings. I'm clear of meetings until 11 o'clock Eastern.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yep. Go ahead.
When I say we, those who will be in Nairobi, will we be holding a face-to-face meeting, or is this not necessary?
That's a good question. I don't think we've...
There is a meeting scheduled.
Yeah,
is there?
Actually, Olga has asked for a scheduled meeting, and there is a meeting scheduled.
I can tell you, just if you bear with me a second, I'll tell you when it is. It's on Sunday from 9 to 11.
Well, that's a good idea. We had one in Korea.
Right. Can we make sure we post the call information as early as possible, Julie, to the list for that? I'm going to have to dial in myself.
Right. I think Glenn will be handling that because I don't personally know what the dial-in information will be, but I'm sure that you know, she'll be handling that very well as usual.
Michael, this is Glenn. Yes, I will be sending out those details this coming week.
That's fantastic, Glenn. Thank you very much.
There will be remote participation available for all the calls.
That's fantastic. I think in this meeting, a lot of us that would normally come are not because of those security concerns. So remote participation is going to be even more important in this particular meeting, I think.
Yes, and I think that we're aware of that, and we are making extra efforts.
Fantastic. All right. If there's no further business, then we'll be having another call next Friday, same time frame. And, you know, one last opening to the floor. Does anyone want to bring up any last items? Okay, hearing nothing, we'll close the meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, Michael. Have a good weekend,
everybody.
Thank you,
Michael. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.